Many of you will possibly have seen and experienced one version or another of an online awareness test in which the viewer is asked carefully to watch a group of 8 young, diverse people on 2 teams, 4 dressed in light-colored clothing, the other 4 in darker clothing, as they jostle around one another while each team passes a basketball among its teammates. The challenge to the viewer, given by an announcer in a vaguely British accent, is to count the number of passes the light-colored dressed team makes. It's a short test, 20 seconds or so. And maybe if you've done it like me, you initially panicked, thinking, oh dear, this is going to be one of those implicit bias exercises where I'm going to be revealed to have been distracted by the racial makeup of the teams and to have been unable to follow the relative color of their clothes. So I put my face closer to the computer screen and tried to do my best to heed the instruction so often given to me in my sports team days, keep your eye on the ball, the light-colored dress team's ball. As the screen went into a pause, I had counted 13 passes and braced myself for what was about to be revealed to me, or about me. The announcer came on.
The answer is 13.
Wait, I got it right? I started to pat myself on the back for perhaps just this once that I failed to succumb to the racial bias that is so baked into the American psyche. Then there was a longish pause, and the announcer went on.
But...
Oh no, here it comes. I thought in the split second, given me to reconsider, the British accent continues.
Did you see the moonwalking bear?
With a what? So I'm thinking, oh, off in the distance, there must have been a bear or something while I was distracted. The video rewinds, and now the scene plays again. There are the 2 teams' members moving in circles around one another, passing the basketballs. And plain as day, a person dressed in a bear costume calmly walks right into the center of the fracas, looks directly at the camera, and begins to undulate their arms while moonwalking in place. The bear then turns to the side and slowly moonwalks out of the group and off screen, arms pumping in front of them. There was no getting around it. I had not noticed something, not only right in front of my eyes, but something dressed in a bear outfit, waving its hands and dancing. I've been thinking a lot about that experience as we segued thematically from November's attention to the awe of December. Of course, one lesson I might have patted myself on the back for is that my keen ability to concentrate allowed me to continue to count basketball passes, not distracted by bear shenanigans. But I've also been thinking about that line from David White's poem I read earlier. Alertness is the hidden discipline of familiarity. It takes a different kind of attention in the midst of a life that breeds familiarity. And much of what becomes familiar are the thoughts that run through my head, thoughts that really do injure to me. It's true that my powers of concentration are keen, but it's where I direct my attention that makes the difference between spending my time worrying that the circumstances of my life will shame me for my essential fraudulence, or bias, or lack of consequence, and experiencing the life-affirming awe that is possible, literally at all times, if I take the time and effort to slow down, tap into the rhythm of nature or the quotidian realities of my day, and make the decision to find in my surroundings an affirmation of my being a necessary part of it all. David White's poem, Everything is Waiting for You, speaks deeply to me in its contention that the antidote to feeling abandoned by life is to tap into the intimacy of everything that surrounds us, to enter into conversation with the wisdom of the stairwell, the friendship of the cooking pot. Of course, there is lightheartedness in his words on the way that the soap dish might enable us, but his point is rather profound, that we are caught up in an essential way with the world as it exists for us, our world. And to feel a part of things is, to some degree anyway, up to us. In this season of too much everything, where we put our attention can take us away, at least temporarily, from the panic and stress, the financial crunches, the painful memories of holidays gone by, and alert us to the bears that may be literally dancing right before our eyes. In the Christian liturgical calendar, this is the season of Advent, a word coming from the Latin adventus, which literally means the coming, and which therefore taps into the sense that we are living on the cusp of something good. Advent is a time of preparation, weeks leading up to the celebration of Christmas and the birth of something new and wondrous, and importantly, something also politically subversive and people affirming. For the child we celebrate on Christmas morning signifies the power inherent in all human beings to work for change, in defiance of the emperor or whatever conventional forms of power that would keep us docile and locked into patterns of servitude or feelings of worthlessness. The lowly child born in Bethlehem, held to be a king, is a sign that each of us has power to tap into the universal. Each is loved and held by whatever transcendent energy we might posit. That the very universe is brought into unique and beautiful and essential expression by every single child that is born, and that includes you and me. There's no one way to do Advent. Its history is actually quite varied, and the season, as currently constituted, is a relatively recent innovation of Christian tradition. These days, Advent begins on the fourth Sunday before Christmas Day, so the exact length of the period varies with the calendar. Originally, or at least in the fourth century when we can first find any mention of it, Advent was a period leading up to the Feast of Epiphany, what many know now as King's Day, or January 6th. For up until that time, there was no celebration of what we now call Christmas. Advent was a time of spiritual preparation to be received into membership in the church, a partner time of the way Lent led up to Easter, where members in training would learn about the faith, hear the stories, and get their hearts in order, ready to be baptized. Even today, Advent is still celebrated as a 40-day cycle by Eastern Orthodox churches, beginning on November 15th and leading up to Epiphany. It is known as the Nativity Fast. So historically, Advent was one of two major path to membership cycles, when adults would become versed in the faith, able to fashion their elevator speeches, or the early equivalent, on why they were joining a particular community of seekers. Historians think the celebration of Jesus' birth on December 25th came into being a bit later as an observant to supplant or at least accompany pagan solstice celebrations and the Feast of Hanukkah. But the first recorded notion of a Christ Mass wasn't until the 11th century. By then, Advent had mostly been adjusted to correspond to Christmas Day rather than Epiphany, and the emphasis shifted too, from catechetical to seasonal, a northern hemisphere public waiting for the light, melding with the anticipation of the birth of the child. The Advent wreath wasn't adopted until the Lutherans invented it in the 1500s to symbolize with a circle, which has no beginning and no end, how our lives participate in the ongoing and eternal life of the universe. The freshness of the wreath materials were held to indicate the newness of the child coming into the world, but the idea was taken from a pagan practice of wheel-shaped bundles of evergreen hosting candles that had been lighted since time immemorial in anticipation of the solstice. In an Advent wreath, there are usually four candles, one for each of the Sundays in the season, although sometimes a central candle is added to be lighted on Christmas Eve. Three of the candles for the first, second, and fourth Sundays are usually purple. Purple was, in the olden days, a rare and precious dye, and so was associated with royalty. Jesus was proclaimed to be kingly in a specifically anti-imperial move that removed divinity from oppressive rulers and assigned it to the humanity of a baby, something accessible to all. The three purple candles are traditionally associated thematically with hope, peace, and love. The remaining candle is pink, in a tradition that seems to be a mirror of Rose Sunday, a midpoint in the Lenten cycle, in which time is taken out from fasting to celebrate the joy of community and universal love. And so the third Sunday of Advent is known as Gaudete Sunday, or Sunday of Joy, which we celebrate today, representing the halfway point in the anticipation building towards Christmas morning. So I think it's fitting that as I speak, our kids are participating in their family ministry holiday party, an occasion for much joy, I hope. Advent calendars began with a practice in early 19th century Germany of putting 24 marks of chalk on the wall and rubbing one off each day of December while lighting a candle each night. Soon the marks on the wall became a practice of placing an image on the wall as a centering vision for the day. And then in the mid-1800s, the first wooden Advent calendar with a scene for each day beginning on December 1st was created. Printed calendars began in the early 1900s, and it was Gerhard Lang in the 1920s who added small doors to fold open on each day. Initially, behind those doors were biblical verses or seasonal or biblical scenes. Chocolates began to appear behind the doors in the 1950s. And today, there are any number of variations on the theme, with verses, toys, or activities hidden behind the numbered days. I like the one on the order of service cover, for it has you gradually creating the nativity scene or creche until Christmas Day. Ending with the child on the last day. Many families are sticklers about the baby not appearing in the common nativity scene or creche until Christmas morning. My own family has so many creches, over 80 at this point, that filling in the babies en masse would be highly impractical. So our Advent activities tend to be more conceptual rather than physical. And this year we're following a practice that comes from Poland, where each day, representing performed acts of altruism, pieces of straw are added to a common manger in preparation for the Christ child's birth. Now, my family engages this tradition conceptually. Each day there is a reading and a reflection, followed by a practical way that joy can be given to someone in need. Pieces of straw, shoveling out a neighbor's driveway, signing an organ donation card, preparing care packages for troops overseas, or simply sharing yourself and your traditions with others. Some of what I'm doing this morning is such an act, at least in my mind, of straw provision, helping more of us better to understand the various symbols that we see this time of year that perhaps aren't a part of our family traditions, but which, properly described, can be invitations to participating in joy rather than becoming encoded barriers to community. Speaking of providing straw for the manger, our aesthetic team of elves has done a beautiful job this past week, greening our meeting house to get us into the holiday spirit. Other straw offerings are available, for which you need only look into and join in with the many activities of our social justice team, or that of our caring committee, so important at holiday times. We've heard about the mitten tree, and we'll have three services of celebrating the solstice and Hanukkah next Sunday morning, and Christmas Eve, Tuesday afternoon and evening. Who might you invite to join you so that this congregation can be a source of joy for the many who might feel alone this season? Ultimately, for me, it is this feeling of being alone that creeps into my mind this time of year. I tend to dwell on memories of my grandparents who are no longer with me. But I try to remember the wonderful times of joy that I was privileged to spend with them. I feel the cold in my feet and my hands, and sometimes despair starts to creep in. And then I think of the warmth of my family, of this congregation, and of the friends I have. It's a good time to reach out, to send a card or plan a Skype or Zoom call, send a social media message or write an email. Each day of Advent, I've been trying to tell someone how much they mean to me throughout the year. It makes me feel good, hopefully does them, and it initiates conversations that wouldn't otherwise happen. Pieces of straw to line the manger for the baby who belongs to us all, for they symbolize us all. Our wonderful 4UU Ooks ensemble began this morning with Carly Simon's anticipation. We may well have become inured to its powerful message, so much do we associate the tune with sugary ketchup. So I think it pays to hear the words again, for they aren't really a celebration of having to wait for something good, but rather an exhortation to live in the present. Hear those words, we can never know about the days to come, but we think about them anyway. And I wonder if I'm really with you now, or just chasing after some finer day. Tomorrow we may not be together. I'm no prophet, and I don't know nature's ways, so I'll try to see into your eyes right now and stay here, because these are the good old days. Advent has many messages, but at its heart, I think, is a message of living in the present, of turning waiting into an exercise and being open to the wonder all around us. After all, waiting isn't necessarily a bad thing. In fact, the secret to satisfaction in life, to a sense of personal control, may lie in making peace with waiting. Our brains are not automatic allies in this, for we live with a legacy of some very old software that tells us that when we are alone, we no longer have the protection of the pack, and that we may very well be in danger. We experience a lack of control. So our impulse when alone is to reach out so as not to be alone anymore. Maybe it's our phone we reach out for more often these days, but it could be anything to fill up the empty space, including things to dull our awareness of that space. You've heard neurons that fire together, wire together. Well, the more we let that circuit run that tells us we're in danger, that makes us feel that we are the unhealthy thoughts that swirl through our minds, the more active that circuit will become. If, on the other hand, we just take a moment, or as I suggested last month, take 15 minutes of each day to realize that we are not our thoughts, that the essence of who we are is apart from the anxiety that can overwhelm us, we allow calming circuits to run in our brain instead. We can learn to be okay with waiting and establish more of a sense of control by doing so. Life gives us so many opportunities to grab a moment to realize that we are a part of the web of existence, and that, at least in part, we have the ability not to give in to manic, grasping, and fearful need, and instead to experience the safety of being surrounded and embraced by life itself. It's Advent. We look forward to good things on their way. Yes, there may be presents to unwrap, and receiving people's good intentions and wishes is always a wonderful thing. And yes, reminding ourselves that at least one time a year, though the days grow dark, light is coming, that this too shall pass, that tomorrow is another day. Those are all salutary thoughts. But also, I think, amidst a flurry of looking forward, Advent gives us a chance to slow down and to understand today as worth celebrating. Today, we can give the gift of companionship or service or love or kindness to another human being. And also today, we can look around when we get up in the morning and see the stairs or the clock or the door, or the window, or the birds, or the animals scampering around, and know that we are never alone, even when people aren't physically by our side. Each of us is part of a world that is significantly changed every day we interact with it. We are connected to everything that surrounds us. So this holiday season, there are wonderful things to remember about times we've spent in the past, and there are exciting things to come. But in a very real way that we can do so much to foster today is what is worth celebrating. Today is literally awesome. For these are the good old days. And I say, bring on the dancing bears.